Okay.
Okay, I'll go ahead and call us to order for the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on December 16th, if the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Public comment number one. This period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Not seeing anybody moving towards the mic. Consideration of minutes from December 9th and the canvas on December 9th.
And I'll move approval of both.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes. Is there anything, any corrections or additions? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Those have been approved. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Those have been approved. Consideration of claims.
I like this one. I'll move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second to approve the claims. Anything further? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Consent agenda. Please add utility permits 1540 and 1541.
1540.
Move approval with the noted changes.
Second.
Got a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Is there anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That's been approved. No public hearing items. Additional items. Consideration of the site development plan of application for zoning permit 8270A. Commercial industrial zoning permit for construction of a warehouse for storage units located at, I'll let you read the number, in Section 7, Washington Township. Charlie, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. So the site plan that was included in your agenda packet should be on the screen there above. What they're proposing to do is build just this first storage building right here. Future plans would be building the second two, but that's not part of this approval process. In review of this, the issue that came up that you're aware of is that public drain tile that they've kind of got mapped out here. At first, we were in fear that the building was going to be built over that public drain tile. We were later assured that it wouldn't, but it was going to be within 5 feet of that tile. In talking with Darren Moon and Scott Wall on the issue, there's some indication that there may be a 50-foot wide public drain tile easement there, although I don't know if there's any documentation on that and what that easement entails. However, Darren's feeling was that we should either have them build this building outside of that 25-foot easement. The other option would be for them to sign an agreement that more or less says if any work ever has to be done on that tile, that the repairs to any of that property would be on the property owner and not the county. So I believe there was a situation where that was done up in Story City. I'm not aware of that. I know, Paul, me and you had a conversation on this last Friday. I don't know if you have anything else to add to it.
I know that there was a building that was built on top of a district tile. I don't know what kind of...
Up in Story City.
Right, yep. But I don't know what kind of arrangements were made before or after the fact.
Nothing was done before because we didn't know about it.
We didn't know about it. Right. It came afterwards, yeah.
And I kind of feel like in talking with the applicant, they don't want to take off 25 feet. They don't want to move it. If anything, they'd rather sign that agreement. And they've also indicated they do have future plans to put similar buildings on the south side of it here, at which point they were going to pay to hopefully relocate that tile to kind of go down the right-of-way of 500th Avenue here and then cut back over on the south side of the property so they can have full use of the property. Mm-hmm.
But so we think the tile now is outside the scope of work that they're talking about here, but not much.
Yeah, and they're planting gravel, not concrete along here. So obviously they'll have gravel on top of the tile, but the building itself for sure will not be on the tile. And when we do move forward, they've located the tile with flags and everything like that. So on our inspection of the project, we'll assure that that is the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, would it... Anytime we have agreements of future construction or things being proposed in which there is a promissory intent to do certain things, is that clearly documented in the conditions for approval
You're talking the future movement,
right.
Movement of that tile. We probably could put a condition on there. And I, you know, my feeling on this is, first of all, I kind of want to get the feeling of the board is, do you want that building located 5 feet from that tile? Are you okay if they do sign an agreement similar to what you did in Story City? And I know that's the drainage district clerks that would have to decide on that eventually, and we'll probably need a separate meeting for that. But if that's the case, then work through some agreement with the landowner to possibly move that tile or get something in writing about moving that tile in the future for the additional buildings that may or may not be placed on the property.
Do we have any history of any tile clean out or work in the last 20, 30 years on that property?
On this one, yeah. There used to be a tile in there. The tile was opened up to an open ditch to relieve some pressure, I believe, that was occurring on that tile, and then they later put in a new tile and reburied it. This has all happened in, I think, about the last 10 years.
Right, right.
And this is a joint district, isn't it?
Yep, this is a joint district. With Boone County.
It's a relatively new tile.
Okay.
And I think when the previous property owner, Theodore Pope, my understanding was at first he was going to have that tile located along the right-of-way and then on the south of the property line, and the drainage district clerks agreed that that was okay as long as he paid the cost. However, when he saw the cost, he decided not to do it anymore because it was a pretty expensive project. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a 24-inch tile, so it's not going to be an inexpensive move. I assume you gentlemen are you're not.
No.
Nobody here? Okay.
No, and I...
I just so they realize that, I mean, if that tile, something happens to that tile, we had an incident that we're dealing with now over in the Marshall Story District where the suck hole that the broken tile created was big enough to drive a semi-truck into. So that's, you know, even your 25-feet setback isn't gonna cure that. But, I mean, it's a relatively new tile,
Charlie, talk to me about, it looks to me like there's another tile or something coming down through.
From the north there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a private tile.
That's a private
one,
tile.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, so my feeling, not in form of motion, but more as part of the conversation, my feeling is pretty simple. As supervisors, if there's an agreement between the owner of this property and the drainage district, which is a joint drainage district, then I can't see any reason that we would want any more than that. But
right.
There needs to be an agreement between the drainage district and the developer here before any work is done.
Right. Yeah. And that's my concern is having it documented and that agreement in place. Yeah.
All right. So take me through, Charlie, site development plan. Do we approve it today? Do we table it and ask for an agreement between the two? What's the right question?
I think we have to do it.
If you don't want the work to occur, I would prefer that we just tabled the matter from approving prior to that. I know when they submitted this on a Friday afternoon or Thursday afternoon and went in the inspection the next day, so I know at first they were in a pretty big hurry to get this done. They wanted to get the concrete in before the ground froze, and later talking to them, they just want to make sure that these buildings are built by the time spring semester's over at Iowa State so they can rent them out, and I don't think that'll be an issue. I'm just not sure scheduling that meeting with the drainage district clerks, how much time that's going to, or how long that's going to take to get, or reviewing the agreement, or whatever we have to do. But I think we can move pretty fast on this. But I would just prefer that we hold off on approving anything until that agreement's in place, if that's what you want to do.
Well, we should be able to schedule a meeting with the trustees, I think, fairly soon. We don't have to abide by the 40-day notice.
No, not for that.
Just for a meeting.
Right.
So, if we can get a meeting scheduled with the Boone County supervisors, and we can do that through a conference call, Scott can set that up.
Okay.
And just to discuss this issue, and if they're okay with it, we can get.
I'm assuming you'd prefer to have an agreement in place before that meeting, or some sort of draft agreement in place before that meeting takes place.
Yeah.
Well, no, because that'll be the purpose of the
meeting. The purpose of the meeting is to see if they're willing to.
If they're willing to agree to.
Okay.
Agree to that, and if they are, then we can get the agreement.
Okay.
Now the flip side of that is the communication with the developers in terms of what it is we're trying to do in our joint drainage district trustee meeting, And so in case they had wanted to have some input or, you know, there, they would have an opportunity to do so.
Okay.
You know.
I think I can work through all that and get the work with Scott to get that meeting set up.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a conference call.
It's not. Yeah, right.
Big of a deal, so.
Okay.
So I would move we refer this back to staff and ask that there be some kind of agreement between the developer and the drainage district prior to any action by the Board of Supervisors.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there anything further on that? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Aye. Clear enough, Charlie?
Yep.
Okay. Next is consideration of Resolution 1549 approving the final agricultural subdivision plat of LBD properties located on certain lands under the ownership of Weston and Shanna Wonder, located Section 19 Palestine Township.
This particular subdivision's kind of been in the works now for many years. Which started this was there is a business that's taking place, a landscaping business that's taking place on here that was issued through a conditional use permit. No, I want to say it was probably 2 or 3 years ago now. Part of the condition of that conditional use permit was, since there was two houses on this property as a whole, was to get those two houses each on their own parcel, since our ordinance only allows one house per parcel. So essentially that's what this subdivision is seeking to accomplish. And looking at it, it does. Both houses are considered farmsteads. They were built, hundreds of years ago on both of them, I think. And both of them are on 1 acre minimum lot sizes, so we're good there. Other than that, the staff report kind of outlined all the regulations. We didn't see any issues with the subdivision plat, and it looks like everything is good to go on it.
Any questions for Charlie?
No.
Everything's good to go. Any concerns? Any questions that have come up during this?
The only question that came up, I think, was from Darren on this, and if the applicant ever wanted to build a driveway on this flag lot down here going in there. There's currently a driveway between the two houses right here that pretty much services the entire property. However, if there was ever another driveway that wanted to be built down here, you're starting to get into that 300-foot spacing requirement not being able to be met. So he had some concerns about possibly approving that. However, again, currently as the property is being used, it is using this as the access point. So I'm not sure if there's any future plans on that driveway down there. And I believe these two gentlemen here are the applicants, so I don't know if they'd be able to answer that question or not. But that was really the only concern that came up. But
so no concern with this as it sits, mm-hmm. just a concern if they were ever to request access
right. exactly
from that portion. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm good.
Yeah. I don't have I don't have any issues.
Okay. Somebody needs to make a motion.
Yeah. So I'll move approval of Resolution 1549.
Second.
So the motion and a second to approve Resolution 1549. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That's been approved.
And then, just for the record, just so you guys are aware, there would be an issue that we'd have to find a way to work through if you ever want access off that one arm of the property.
Agency reports, Department of Human Services, Pauline Rutherford and Angie Kreese. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Oh, shoot.
Good morning. My name is Angie Kreese, and I am the new income maintenance supervisor located at the Ames office.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. Specifically, we work with food assistance, cash assistance, the FIP program, Medicaid, and the state's Medicaid expansion, the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. Fiscal year 2014, there was a total of $9.5 million in food assistance benefits issued to the residents of Story County. And Story County's looking at a participation rate in food assistance of 25.7%. For November, the average monthly food assistance allotment statewide was $177 per household, and Story County for the same month is looking at $178, so right on par with the whole state. And then effective October 1st, there is an income limit increase as well as a change in some of the deductions allowed for food assistance. Also, we're completing our first year of the Medicaid expansion, the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan, and we're currently serving statewide over 100,000 Iowans on that plan. Iowa Health and Wellness Plan provides insurance for persons between the ages of 19 and 64 who have income under 138% of the federal poverty level. Insurance provided to these customers are equal to or exceeds the state of Iowa employee insurance plans, and it also includes prescription and dental coverage. There are actually two types of Iowa health and wellness plans. The first is called the Iowa Wellness Plan, and that's for persons up to 100% of the federal poverty level. Those persons are assigned a primary physician and receive their health services through that physician, coordinated by that physician. 101 to 138% of the federal poverty level is the Iowa Marketplace Choice Plan, and that is provided by a third-party insurance company, and right now the third-party insurance company is Coventry. Does anybody have any questions?
Nope.
And then just as a summary, we are holding pretty steady with our staffing levels in the office. I will say that we had been down a few income maintenance positions in the office. We're filling two coming up in the next couple of months to try and get those numbers back up to where they were. And if you have not yet heard, the service area manager, Pat Penning, is retiring at the end of January. Should not incur any difference in how we communicate. I'll still be the main point of communication. There's not been, her replacement has not been selected yet, nor have they said if there's going to be an interim or anything like that. So, but yeah, that's kind of where we're at.
Great.
Okay.
How are you getting along with your new phones?
Don't like them.
Well, let me just tell you that I just finished meeting with Lisa as we were talking about our budget proposal, our projections, and I was not aware of some of the hidden costs of the base costs, and so Darren and I are going to look over some of the base costs, and I don't know that we need all of the bells and whistles that we're apparently paying for, so we're going to pull back on some of that stuff. Like, we're paying for 37 lines. We don't have 37 bodies in the office that are active. So I think we need to, you know, pull back. At $65 a month for a call center, I don't even know what that is. So it's things like that that we have to look into and explore and try to minimize our costs on that phone system, because it's we're overspent on it already. I hear we're not the only ones. The phone system itself is it's fine. I'm just surprised at the cost. It really caught us by surprise this year. So.
Okay.
Yep.
Very good. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Next is the departmental report. Keith Morgan, Emergency Management.
Good morning.
Keith, how you doing this morning?
Good morning.
Just happy to be here, proud to serve, as always.
Every day.
I'll start off with responses. On November 24th, our office assisted the Nevada Fire Department with a Red Cross disaster assistance response for two families displaced by a fire in their trailer. And then on December 3rd, the coordinator responded to Huxley to assist with a search for a missing child. We began activation procedures to provide tracking dogs and also search management resources. Fortunately, the child was located prior to a full activation, but it did highlight the value of having the Star One volunteer search and rescue team here in the county. Under planning, on the topic of search and rescue, emergency management is working with the sheriff's office as a part of their partners group, which may respond to suspected child abduction events. We are integrating into their structure to provide logistical support to these operations if needed. On October 30th, our agency hosted a meeting to develop a countywide debris management plan, which was attended by 23 people representing communities, first responders, Iowa State University, waste transportation companies, the Ames Reclamation Center, and the Boone and Marshall County landfills. The meeting served to educate all the parties on the significant interaction that will occur if there's a need for large-scale debris management. The planning session identified specific areas that further planning will be needed, and our agency will continue to coordinate this planning to increase the speed of this vital task after a disaster strikes. Hopefully these planning efforts will also minimize the cost of to the affected jurisdictions and increase the likelihood that these expenses will be reimbursed to the maximum level possible. This effort highlights the need for emergency management to be a cooperative effort between governmental agencies, business, and the citizens. Our agency worked with NVEDA and the Rural Domestic Preparedness Consortium, the RDPC, to bring a continuity of government operations class to NVEDA on April 4th. You may remember I stressed the need for Story County to work to enhance their resiliency through continuity of operations planning, and this class offers a great opportunity for our county officials to get valuable training. The deadline for registration for the class is March 20th, and we have a link to the registration on our website. We have continued our efforts to facilitate multidisciplinary planning with agencies that may be responding to an active shooter situation. We met with fire officials and emergency medical personnel to look at where there will be interaction between these agencies, identifying actions and communications that will help facilitate a quicker and more efficient response, and we hope to develop documentation to help guide agencies as they train and exercise for these events. Unfortunately, the after actions that I have read of these events contain numerous areas where better coordination between the responding agencies would have greatly improved the response. I hope our effort will strengthen our ability to react to one of these tragic events should they occur here. The Emergency Management Agency continues to enhance our resiliency through our work with Iowa State University to develop facilities at the Environmental Health and Safety Building as an alternate EOC. ISU has been very supportive of this effort, as the facility is also their backup EOC. We are working with them to identify improvements to the facility to ensure it meets both of our needs. Our office is also working to build procedures necessary to gain access to the Alert Iowa statewide emergency messaging system. The capabilities of this system are so different and improved from Code Red that we're essentially starting from scratch when developing standard operating procedures for its use. Still, we hope to have at least a minimum required procedures in place to access the system by March 2015 to provide the E911 board the option of going with statewide system and reduce the cost to the county for this capability to zero.
Keith, the E911 board has to make a decision on Code Red by when?
By February 5th, I think, is the date. I just had a meeting with the executive board yesterday on this event.
Okay, and if they decide, if they're not convinced that it's going to be operational, the new system is going to be operational by March, and they decide to extend their time with Code Red, is it they've got to go for another year, or is there an interim step they can take?
There were the discussions to contact Code Red and see if there was any ability to take an interim step, six-month contract. I do not foresee that as a likely event, considering Code Red has not been cooperative with other agencies that are moving away from them towards WINS.
Okay. Yep. And likelihood, as you see it today, likelihood that WINS is going to be operational by that March 15?
It is. There has been a lot of issues with other EMAs, my other counterparts, with submitting their SOPs and getting them approved in time to get handed off to the WINS points of contact, which is what we need to be able to fully develop these SOPs. As soon as I finish this meeting, I'm making another call up to Iowa Homeland Security to try and get that handoff over to the individuals. There is the issue of training. Just having a mass notification system is not sufficient.
Right.
Mass notification used incorrectly can actually be a greater detriment by far to an emergency response than doing nothing at all at times. So we have to be able to have a system developed and training in place. Now, where we're starting from is concentrating on both Melissa and I getting knowledgeable on this system, getting trained up on it so that we could provide that initial access into the WINS system and then to expand it on down to our dispatch agencies, because there is a considerable amount of training given the number of people that reside within our dispatch agencies to get them up to speed and get them proficient enough to be able to do this activity should they need to.
How big of exposure is it if we were to go sometime without a mass notification system? So if we dropped Code Red, if the E911 board decided to drop Code Red, but the WINS system was not operational and there was a gap there in terms of having the mass notification capability?
In purely my experience in the 3.5 years, we have used the Code Red system once for an immediate kind of emergency mass notification on it. So that's one out of three. Hopefully our capabilities would ramp up quickly after we did get this. And a lot of this would also fall upon our PSAPs, our dispatch agencies, on how much effort and priority they would give to getting their people trained up on it once we got the system up and running, and also having the resources to conduct that training, given that my office only has two people and we may have to go somewhere external. We have yet to be able to review what WENS offers as, online training and things like that.
And how many of our communities also have their own mass notification system?
Nevada has its own mass notification system, and Ames also has, as I understand the system, is additional capabilities built on to what the E911 board has for Code Red. So in reality, there is two systems, but there's really two and a half systems.
But if E911 were to drop Code Red, that would impact Ames?
Yes.
It would not impact Nevada?
As I understand it.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions? For preparedness, our efforts to revitalize the Coalition for Disaster Recovery, the CDR, suffered a setback when we lost our contractor. This event highlights the significant difficulty our office faces finding volunteers and contractors with emergency management planning skills and qualifications. Since our funding for our contractors is limited and sporadic, it's difficult for us to augment our office with the most important thing for emergency management, knowledgeable and motivated people. On the positive side of this issue, we have had good success with another one of our contractors that is helping to improve our training program for the CDR. On the training side of things, the coordinator, me, I attended a Homeland Security Conference in October. Presentations on recovery reinforce the value of the ongoing efforts in our office to enhance our Emergency Support Function 14 recovery. The complexity of recovery requires that we develop a process to integrate all the efforts of the different local, state, and federal agencies after a disaster occurs in order not just to rebuild after a disaster, but also to rebuild things better. And that's one of the things that I have seen in quite a few of what I have gone to for after actions after Joplin and places like that. Yeah, you can rebuild it, and you can rebuild it quickly. But if you haven't thought through these processes prior to it, you're going to miss out on an opportunity to use it as a chance to make things better both short-term and long-term. Both the coordinator and deputy attended the HAZMAT symposium as a part of our HAZMAT training requirements. The final speaker was the emergency manager that responded to the fertilizer explosion that leveled a significant portion of West Texas and killed 15 people. The speaker highlighted that the establishment of command and control during the first few hours of a disaster is essential. Just as we see in here in Iowa, there was no lack of responding agencies during the initial response. The main difficulty was the proper identification of priorities and coordinating the efforts of the responders. It's our hope that our efforts to provide training to local first responders and jurisdictional executives, along with exercises to practice these skills, will help improve our ability to rapidly establish command and control during a difficult situation like this. Our agency, in our role as the sponsor of the Local Emergency Planning Committee, hosted a business continuity lunch and learn along with Drew Camp from the Ames Economic Development Commission in Safeguard, Iowa. This event brought together first responders, governmental entities, and businesses to receive a briefing on the first six steps a business should take to become better prepared for a disaster. What was more important than the briefing was the dialogue that occurred during between these groups after the lunch and learn was over. For exercises, on October 4th, our office conducted a drill with the Story County Amateur Radio Emergency Service, ARES, and the Mid-Iowa Retired Senior and Volunteer Program, RSVP. One objective of the exercise was for RSVP to do volunteer management. The second objective of the exercise was for ARES to test the ability to use the deployable radio kits that our office helped to purchase. In the drill, they had to mobilize their volunteers, set up mobile antennas in a base station, and then conduct radio checks to help determine the range of the portable radios under realistic conditions. Both objectives were met, and we have already taken action on some of the lessons learned from the drill. We also conducted a workshop with Story City on October 9th to improve their emergency operations plan. The workshop not only involved the city's first responders, it involved the city administration, the school superintendent, and local businesses. By walking through a disaster scenario, starting with events that would lead up to the disaster, and going through the first couple hours of the event, we educated stakeholders on their roles and responsibilities. The workshop generated possible improvements to the plan, which will enhance the city's ability to respond. I would like to offer assistance to Story County Administration to run through a workshop like this once a continuity of operations plan is finalized. As I discussed during our last visit, the deputy conducted an annual I-35 closure drill. The drill walked through the process that would be followed to alert all the response agencies if I-35 was closed. As always, the drill identified some minor changes to people or phone numbers that changed from last year. Looking ahead, now that we have our budget developed for FY16, my office is refocusing on planning. During this busy time, we have managed to squeeze into our schedule completion of a revision of the ESF Emergency Support Function 10 HAZMAT. And we'll be pushing that out for approval by the Commission and also the Local Emergency Planning Commission. We will also re-engage on revising our recovery plan, that's ESF 14, the Emergency Management Support Function, that's ESF 5, and the Basic Emergency Operations Plan. We are working with Nevada to conduct an exercise both with DuPont and Burke Corporation. Another player at the Burke exercise will be the Story County Medical Center, and we welcome their engagement on disaster response issues. In my last visit with you, I briefed you on an initiative within the Commission to start looking at emergency medical response within the county. As I stated at this time, this is not a direct responsibility of the Emergency Management Agency. But as the Commission is made up of the jurisdictional executives in the county, it offers a forum for the discussion on this issue. During the last Commission meeting, Ambulance Services presented information on their impression of the status of our system and future trends, which indicates there will be more demand on the system. As a result of our conversation, the Commission indicated that they had a desire to continue to look at this issue, and my office is crafting options to facilitate this effort. With that, I'd like to open it up to any questions you might have.
When do you have time to breathe?
It does keep us busy.
It does. You got a lot of things going, and again, the scenario to making sure that not only do we have systems in place, which we do in many areas, but having the ongoing training and communication, as you know and have said over and over again, how important that is. And so, again, I'm really encouraged that you're able to reach out and bring more and more groups to the table to be part of this process. It's going to hopefully we never have to deal with some of these major situations, but I think the planning will be very essential if we need to deal with it and have a speedy recovery. So thank you for your leadership in this area.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks, Keith.
Next, Planning and Development Department report. Good morning again, Charlie.
Okay.
All right. Real quick, going over some of our current numbers from the last 3 months. We're looking at, over the past 3 months, we've issued 40 zoning permits, 9 agricultural exemptions. We've had about 18 different addressing issues that we've dealt with and conducted 3 property research requests. You can see in the chart there above, it kind of gives a comparison as far as zoning permit numbers go, probably down just a little bit from the last 2 years over these past 3 months. Agricultural exemptions are probably about in line, but nothing I think to be too concerned about as far as those numbers being down. Looking at our enforcement, we currently have 4 pending complaints that we're working through. We've started to track our complaints through our website. I'm not sure if this will work here. No. Well, anyways, if you go to the Story County website, there is, I believe, a link on there where you can report a concern right off the main page. We've now filled in our zoning complaint form right there, so if you do have a complaint or if any of your constituents have complaints that they want to file in our office, just tell them to go to our website and use that report a concern feature, and it'll actually get directly emailed to us. We can track our way through that, and they'll get email updates as we track through those complaints, so it's actually a really good tool to use. As far as violations, we've issued 4 notice of violations over the last 3 months, totaling about $405 worth of fines that we've received. We have 1 pending notice of violation out there right now, and we did issue 1 citation that was due to a no response on the notice of violation, and that has been resolved through the courts. Looking at our current development cases, we have 3 out there, I think, pending right now, or 2 out there pending right now, Section 1.11 of the Story County Court of Ordinances. You'll recall at our joint meeting with the Planning and Zoning Commission, that was the public notification procedures on public hearings and how we have to publish those notices in the paper. We'll be bringing that forward here in the beginning part of January to the board for revisions. Cameron Estates, we do have the first phase of that approved. However, the second phase is still pending. That preliminary plat does expire on February 11th. I did talk to the developers on that issue actually yesterday. They don't foresee the second phase coming forward, probably even in the calendar year 2015. So we'll need to work with them on extending that date for expiration on the preliminary plat, and we'll do that come February. We currently have 4 pending plats that we're awaiting an application filing fee on. We do have 1 pending CUP that's for that cell tower in Colo, I think I informed you about last time, and we're still waiting for some more submitted requirements on that application. Conceptual review, we have had 1 meeting over the past 3 months. That was for a proposed subdivision just south of Cambridge. You can kind of see the site plan here that they propose. This is Highway 210 down here. This is the Cambridge Blacktop. If you know where Valley View subdivision is, it's just right across the street from there. I know at this point I don't think they're going to be moving forward anytime soon. They're kind of waiting to see where that final route of the pipeline goes, because it could potentially affect this property, which could potentially kill the development. So I think they're going to kind of wait to see what happens with that before coming forward. Looking at our Board of Adjustment, we didn't have a September or October meeting. We did have a November meeting that was to approve the conditional use permit from Iowa State for that Met Tower to research the wind farm. We have changed our meeting dates and times for our Board of Adjustment. They will now start at 4 p.m. on the third Wednesday of the month. And I know I've brought this up. I just wanted to remind the board we are going to have 2 vacancies on the Board of Adjustment beginning on January 1st, and just encouraging those to get filled, because that's can sometimes be a big concern for us when we get 3 or 4 members on the Board of Adjustment. Planning and Zoning Commission, that's also been slow. We didn't have a September or December meeting. At the October meeting, we did have that ISU conditional use permit, the Brecky rezoning, the shadow flicker regulations, and the sign regulations. All those have been approved by the Board of Adjustment and by you, the Board of Supervisors. The November meeting was mainly to cover our annual joint meeting. You'll recall that. And again, we do have a new meeting date and time. We are having the Planning and Zoning Commission meet on the first Wednesday at 4 p.m. We've had 4 approved subdivisions over the past 3 months. That last one actually was the one that you approved today, but the other 3 are listed there on the screen. Did provide you a copy of what we had proposed for our 2015 work program. That came out of that joint meeting with the ideas that were discussed for us to work forward on. I won't go through all 21 of these items. I guess if there's any questions on them, any comments you want to make on them, I guess we can do that. But I won't bore you to death with details on all 21 of them. So I think with that, that's all I have. I'll leave that up there if there's any questions you have on those items.
Mm-mm. No, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm. Other reports. Discussion of time frame, tasks, and budget for the coordinated long-term plan. Charlie and Leanne.
Well, thank you. Oh my gosh, this chair is low. I did. Well, that's not unusual.
Hey, wait a minute. Oh, no, never mind. Go ahead. I thought we missed something. We didn't.
Go ahead.
Sure. I'm good.
Well, good morning. What Charlie and I are going to do is go over in a few slides just what we see as the next steps for and lead you in some discussion on the time frame, tasks, and budget for our coordinated long-range plan. It's going to be a joint effort between planning and development and then myself through the County Outreach and Special Projects Management. We have a little tagline that I've put out there, from cornerstone to capstone, the Story County Comprehensive Plan, you know, the C2C project. Kind of catchy, but just it kind of does cover all aspects of what we're looking at. A cornerstone is an important quality or feature on which a particular thing depends on or is based. And we have a very rich, long heritage of planning in Story County. First comprehensive plan was done in 1977, but we actually started zoning in 1958. And through that zoning, there was a lot of research and plans that were put in place. Our capstone, then, is the high point, the crowning achievement, and that really will reflect where we'll be once this is finished. So that's the tagline. It's important to have now because we'll be going out here in December or January for RFP. And I just want to have something to be able to show potential consultants what our vision may be. Pardon me. This is the overall time frame, preliminary schedule, and budget. I'll get to budget shortly. It is a 16, 17-month process starting right now. And that's best-case scenario, I'll be honest. I mean, it is a tight time frame, but there is a lot of work that's already been done. We're not reinventing any wheels. It starts with developing and releasing the RFP and selecting a consultant to identifying the project team and then visioning, finalizing the visioning that we worked on as a county last year. That's the first few months, and then it goes into goals development. And that's really where the consultant comes on board, is providing assistance to that. I'm going to go to this next slide. You'll see what we've done is broken down the consultant, where they're involved, and then the staff time. And COS, PM is me, and then P&D is planning and development staff. It really is a coordinated effort of all three parties to bring this through to fruition, from the goals development all the way to the implementation strategies. Right now, there is money in the budget, $35,000 for this current fiscal year. As we get into budget discussions, we recommend lowering that to $25,000 and then increasing the amount next fiscal year to $50,000, a total $75,000 budget for consultant fees. And then the various elements and key elements of the plan are listed up here, and that is a really small type up there. I apologize. But really, it's more for discussion's sake, too. As you well know, comprehensive plan is various elements, and what we've done is taken those various elements and noted what's been done already. And a key example, especially since Keith is here, is emergency management has completed the hazard mitigation plan. That's not something – that's an element of the comprehensive plan, but it's not something that needs to be redone or revisited. But what we can do is add the language or add reference to that plan into the comprehensive plan. And if you'll recall, the comprehensive plan audit was presented to you about a year ago right now. That's a lot of the homework that's already been done. The next steps on January 13th, we'll be bringing a draft RFP to the board to allow us to go forward and start soliciting consultant our proposals. Contractor selection in February. Throughout that time, too, Charlie and I will be working to identify the project team, what staff members will help us out. In addition, what other type of, maybe there's some contractors out there, some developers, real estate agents, members of the public, just interested in stakeholders that can serve as a sounding board for the next 16, 17 months. And then throughout that time, too, in January and February, I'll be out meeting with the communities to talk about the vision work that was done and bring that forward, too. Are there any questions? Well, Charlie, do you have anything you want to add?
Nope.
Do you have any questions?
Yeah, just make a note. So originally when we talked about this, we budgeted 35 for the year we're in now, and I believe we were planning on 35 again for next year, so a total of 70. What Leanne suggested now is reduce it to 25 for this year, but go to 50. So it'd be 75 instead of 70 total cost. But this is the end that we've been working toward. With everything that we've done over the last 4 years in terms of planning, now it all starts to come together and we try to pull it together. So the commitment that I see this board making if we approve the RFP in January is funding the $50,000 for next year.
Sounds reasonable.
And that'll be tied around selected projects and things of that nature.
Yeah, that'll be primarily to bring consultants on board who will work with Leanne and Charlie or whoever Charlie designates from planning development along with that team that we're going to pull together to do this whole thing. 16 months, like Leanne referred to, it's really more of an 18-month kind of project if we push it. 16 is really, really pushing it.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Good job.
Yep. Thanks for your work on that.
Do we need any action today? We don't need to do anything to get the RFP.
No.
Just
moving.
Just direction to go ahead with the schedule.
And I think you've got that.
Yeah.
Discussion and direction on centralized mail delivery system.
That's what got me here today, the excitement of talking about centralized mail.
I am surprised we don't have a large crowd. This is such an exciting topic.
I thought we were going to reinvent the pony?
Pony Express?
Pony Express. I think that's centralized itself. You know.
That was not an alternative discussed.
No.
I was tasked within my work program to look at our current system, how we have mail come in and how it goes out of our county operations. So to do so, I did start by asking some staff members in all the different buildings to help me out, because where I thought I had a sense of what happened here, there were always some things I learned throughout this process, and I definitely did not know what was happening in other buildings. So I do want to start by acknowledging Renee, who is here and can join me if she'd like to at any time. Renee Tweet, Connie Kenyon, Jolene Van Wass, Kristen Cook, Janice McConnell, and Stacey Harridge. Did I miss anyone? I think that was it. And other discussions with the other county staff members throughout the process. Really started by identifying what the project we're looking at, what we're intending to look at, and sharing that with department heads and elected officials to kick this off. Looking at the current system in place, you know, what are we doing? Is it a good practice or not? What are our current and future needs? What are potential measures we can implement? Key is to increase efficiencies. And then the big thing that really kind of drove this is the IMPB implementation, which is Intelligent Mail and Postal Barcode. And it's an initiative from the USPS, and I'll get to that shortly. So I'm going to start and just look at the outgoing mail. That colored scheme does not work well up there, but this was included in the memo as well. Currently, we have 5 leases between Story County and Pitney Bowes. Pitney Bowes is one of the leading companies throughout the nation on postage, mail machines, etc. You'll see they are all, except for conservation, 60 months in length. The most recent one being the Sheriff's Office that was approved by the board this October. The one that will come due the next will be the Treasurer's Office, and that is the one that serves all the administration building, as well as the secondary roads come over and run postage on that too. Animal control and community life both buy stamps. That is how they put postage on their mailing. They don't have the number of mailings that these other entities have. The outgoing mail is then, I'll get to that shortly. Incoming mail then, mail is delivered to all the individual buildings or post office boxes. Several elected officials have their own post office box. I know the treasurer's office has one, the recorder's office has one. and that is how they receive their daily mail. At the administration building, specifically, once it's delivered, it goes to the main counter. I think everyone knows where that is. And then Darla does sort it and place it in the appropriate bins. For those other buildings outside of here, very similar process. Delivered by the post office and then separated or sent to individual buildings or individual departments. What we did is we did the research on the incoming system, the outgoing system, and we then started talking about some different alternatives. And we really kind of three to four. One, outsourcing to a vendor, so the outgoing mail primarily, because we're satisfied with the incoming mail coming to all the buildings through the Postal Service. Developing a hybrid approach, maybe outsourcing some aspects and then doing in-house, like we've been doing. Making slight modifications to our current practices, and lastly, maintaining our current practice, just doing a status quo. So in the outsourcing and hybrid approach, we looked at what alternatives there are for a third-party vendor through a mail delivery system. We had a conversation with Cerro Gordo County. They have brought on mail services out of Des Moines to do their mail, their outgoing mail. Basically, simplify what they do. They have a bin. The mail gets put in a bin. Mail services takes it. They postage it. They deliver it to the post office. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but there's a day delay. We did have several concerns noted, just a few of them. We have several different buildings, and so if we are looking at increasing efficiencies, we're asking other entities to bring their mail here or wherever this would be. Let's look at conservation, for example. That would be an additional trip to bring their mail here, or even HSC, Human Services Center, bringing the mail over here, rather than just mailing directly from Ames. And then to have another entity pick it up and take it to Des Moines to stamp it. It's going to cause delays. And there might be time-sensitive materials, such as absentee ballots, that delay could be very problematic. And through all that, we question whether there would actually be cost savings. So as we began discussing that, was an approach we said, no, that's not one we would like to look at. Stop me with questions at any time, too. Our current practice, as I said, I want to note, too, that this focuses just on the administration building from this point on. We all realize that asking other entities to come to this building to bring their mail, to come pick up their mail on a daily basis, is not going to increase our efficiency. That will add time. It will add travel. It will just complicate everything. So these next two focus just on the admin building. We looked at rotating schedule departments. So we'll just say hypothetically we had an area where everyone took their mail unmetered. A department would go and run everyone's mail once a day and then take it to the post office. The next month, a different department would do that. From a staff perspective, we said, no, that's not a manageable solution. And then we also discussed the opportunity to have one person do it, one staff member, that would be responsible for doing what I just described. That would require some modification to the mailroom. It would require making sure that one individual, the department for whom they worked, had coverage in the case of absence. Or if they had to be away from the desk for some reason, we could cover that. And then lastly, pick up mail, outgoing mail by the Postal Service. I did talk to the Nevada Post Office. They said, sure, if your mail is at the front counter, when we deliver your mail, we'll take it. There's a couple problems with that. One, there's a huge security issue at our front desk. There's not a secure location to keep outgoing mail. In addition to that, any other time beyond that 9 to 10 o'clock time, and that's another issue, too. There's not a definitive time that our mail comes every day. I think you all are aware of that. It can be 9 o'clock. It can be 10 o'clock. They're usually right in between there, but if you get there at 9:05 with your mail and they've already left, you're going to have to take your mail up to the post office yourself. And then the Postal Service requires us to have a current date stamp on all postage we turn in, all metered postage we turn in. If you've run the mail the night before and expect it to go out the next morning from this type of approach, we have to rerun the mail and change the date because you would not have a current date. So there's some real issues with that approach as well. And then status quo was the last alternative we looked at, keep what we're doing. Okay, I'm going to delve into this IMPB, the pending issue, with whatever little I do know at this point. It's a requirement that goes into effect toward the end of January. It's coming. Whether we're going to kick and scream or not, it's here. None of our leases are set up to accommodate this, those five leases in place. A biggest concern, obviously, because of the volume, is the treasurer's office. And there are substantial costs to implement this. It will require investment in both software and hardware to continue to realize our commercial mailing rates, too. It's very important to note that we get a commercial base rate for using that metered machine. In addition, if we don't follow IMPB, we will receive a fine for various pieces of mailing. I'm not sure if fine is a surcharge. I'm not sure what the exact title is. But what we're doing is working with Pitney Bowes to get some different alternatives together, and I will present those then through the work sessions, budget work sessions. So with all that, I'm going to ask you if you have any questions. But
this wouldn't qualify as an unfunded mandate coming from the federal government, I assume, right? As far as the new software that we'd have to have in place, this has been pending for a little over a year or so. I mean, how much notification have we had?
Well, it was originally supposed to go into effect in 2014, and then they delayed partial implementation. It's been a little bit of a challenge to get all the ducks lined up in a row so that we can analyze what we currently have, to be honest.
And do we have any counties or municipalities currently on this system now? And can they share any information in terms of the cost that is to provide the service?
That's interesting. I did reach out to Robin Harlow at ISAC, and that was brought up at fall school. And prior to that, who was dealing with the IMPB? Mm-hmm. And like Robin said, they sent something out and they didn't hear anything back. That no one has. And I think
no
a lot of people are going to get surprised. And fortunately, Renee was up to speed and caught it, so that we're not going to be surprised. I think she's not happy she caught it, but we're going to be in a better position. It will probably cost some additional funds that we've not budgeted or planned on in the past, and it may cause us to change how our formula, too, and specifically in this building, how that machine is paid for, because right now it comes all of Renee's budget.
It really eliminates the type of stamping that for the parcels that go out. There's a kind of a code, barcode.
Right. If you look at this issue or this slide in the right hand corner, and what the IMPB is, I'm sure you've seen the commercials for Sunday delivery that the Postal Service is doing, and they've been. They have not been a profit generating entity for, I'm not sure, 10, 12 years. This is part of their overall master plan to even the tide a little bit, even the playing field with the larger parcel deliveries, the FedExes and UPSs, especially with the Sunday delivery model. And then this is their way to, if you order something UPS, you can track it. Now with this, you can track it as well, too. And their model, or they're promoting it as being a better tracker. So my recommendations are for this building, admin building, as well as all buildings, we maintain the status quo for how we've been doing outgoing and incoming mail. That means department by department, you do your own mail, and then department by or building by building, mail is brought in and sorted. For in this case, Darla will continue to sort the mail. And on that note, though, I think it's time that we look at a more secure location or means to bring in that incoming mail.
Keith is volunteering. He said he's got the perfect spot downstairs. Yeah, I noticed him moving his head.
It is, especially if there are checks that departments have not yet picked up their mail. If it happens to stay there overnight, there's a key, but not all departments don't have those keys. It's not a very good secure location.
Now, let me ask the question off the top of the head. When you talk secure location, you know the room right inside the little office area right inside the treasurer's office? What is that? Is that a possibility of something that might be utilized? And the question that is, when you talk about a secure location, you're talking about incoming mail coming to a central place until someone comes down and starts to
sort rather than just sitting on the front desk.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And to be honest, Wayne, I haven't. The only thing I had thought of was where we currently have the postage meter, using that at room, because we all have a fob, so you'd have to fob it. But then how does the post office
yeah,
get in there,
right,
too?
Yeah, right. And the meter right now is a little bit behind your office in the Renee. Like, I'm not sure that.
But that would be definitely something we'd want to work with Cal to do, to identify where the best location is and involve the post office in that discussion, too, because we don't want to make it inconvenient for them.
Well, as far as that issue goes, that one doesn't concern me at all. We're going to figure it out as we look at having that front desk staffed more and more. There's some security measures we need to take for the computer. It seems to me it could be fairly easy to build something that the postman can slip the mail into that's secure from the public until somebody accesses it with a key. So, frankly, I'm not all that worried. I do have a couple questions. First question I have is, why do we have 5 different account reps from Pitney Bowes for 5 different machines instead of one?
And I had asked the individual from Pitney Bowes with whom I've been working with that question, and he did not have a good answer. And I'm still following up with him. I had also asked, too, could they be combined into one lease? And he said, no, that was not an option. So we're going to push it a little bit.
Why is it not an option? Because it's cost-effective for them to do it that way.
Yeah.
And so the other question is who else out there can provide this type of service? Because when you've got competition bidding for it, it makes you rethink about how you want to, you know, do things.
All the leases that are in place are with the Board of Supervisors.
Right, exactly.
You've approved all 5 leases.
We can fix that.
Resides with us. So a couple questions I had. The account rep doesn't make any sense to me because you hear different things and you get different things from different account reps.
Right.
And you're not comparing apples to apples ever. Second is the amount per month. Do we know how many pieces of mail we're sending out of each one of those? And is that dependent upon, is that factored into that amount per month? I want to know what we're spending for this. And Leanne, I think based on what you've told us, I'm in agreement with you that there's no good way to logistically bring all of our mail services in the county into one place.
Yeah.
And so continuing with some version of the status quo makes sense to me, but we need to recognize that the status quo does not continue because of what the Postal Service is requiring. So
right.
Now's a great time to try to make sure that while we're running it different ways, different places, that it's all – it's cohesive in the manner that we run it. And then the second thing is, it makes no sense. I didn't realize this until it was brought to my attention, that we've got 100% of the postage for this building running through the treasurer's office, which that doesn't, for the way we budget, that doesn't work. And so it seems to me there's got to be a relatively simple way, nothing simple, there's got to be a way for everybody when they put the postage on there for it, no different than a copy machine, where that is charged back to an individual department or elected official.
I mean, is there a code that you punch in or anything?
Yeah,
no.
You select the department.
Right.
And the departments pay postage. The lease, though, that $1,019 per month is 100% absorbed by Renee and the treasurer.
And that's not dependent on how many pieces of mail we send out?
No. That's not the postage at all. That's just the lease, monthly lease for the postage machine.
The machine does, and I'm not positive on how,
stamps.
But I think it sends a report to the auditor's office each month.
to tell for our budget line item of how much postage. It will tell you how many pieces, envelopes, parcels. It'll tell you all. It's all there.
Yeah.
You can take it. You can go down there and punch it all in. I don't know the numbers off my top of my head, but
we can get those. Yeah. That would be part of the information.
Actually, I'm the one who does the report for the postage machine, and I pull all the departments off and charge each department. So when we do claims, we put that claim in, and then each department is charged their postage. So if you guys want to look at that.
Yeah, I'd like to look at it, but it just seems to me that the $1,019 ought to also be distributed as part of a formula based on who's using it.
How much you use it.
And Shelley, how far back do you have reports?
How far back do you want to go?
So we could go from the time that this lease started and do a trends analysis and see, you know, Board of Supervisors has monthly used this, ran this much postage, and I can work with Shelley to get that report and get those numbers together. And that would, again, as part of that information that we would bring for the budget work sessions.
Yeah, I mean, if you just divide it up by basically what, if you average what you're using over a certain period of time, and every department kicks that amount of money in towards the end or the month.
And, you know, it's going to fluctuate based on general elections and different things. So I don't know that there's a right way or a wrong way to.
Right, but to me, the $1,019 ought to be part of the postage. I mean, we're paying that for the postage. And so if at the end of the day, what we're getting on our commercial rate plus the $1,019 divided up, if we're not doing better than sticking stamps on the dang thing, then you got to question whether it's fiscally responsible to do it. And I'll bet you right now that in some of these, the treasurer's office, for example, we've got enough mail going through here that we absolutely earn back that $1,019. Mm-hmm. But there's some on here that I'm not convinced there's enough mail going out that we're seeing any savings. It's a convenience factor. And I don't know that local government's supposed to be paying for convenience. We're supposed to be doing things in the most cost-effective way possible. So I'd like to dig in. I'd like to see the reports. I'd like to dig into this a little bit. I'd like to, you know, if you guys would, I'd like to have a conversation with Pitney Bowes, whoever you've been dealing with, and maybe a step up and a step up and a step up from there, and try to figure out what the hell's going on and why we've got five accountants.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I think the biggest thing is very few people have ever really questioned the process or the procedure and looking for efficiencies. And I think we're right on and trying to do that.
Five different.
Did that make any sense?
No.
I mean, it does. It might make sense for Pitney Bowes, and it absolutely makes sense for those five account reps, but it doesn't make any sense for us.
Right.
Well, even during our discussions, I can't remember who said, I think it might have been Janice said, yeah, I've worked with this person, but then I've worked with this person. Well, it was Connie said it too, and we started out with this person, but now we're working with this person. And they're, that from a standpoint of being able to continue the operation and maintenance too, it makes it difficult. Who is the account rep? If we had just one for Story County, is incredibly
efficient. I mean, all the leases go through this board for approval. So why would we need five different reps?
Because don't we have the same rep for copy machines? Isn't James everyone's rep?
I don't know.
That's next. That's next on the list, Renee. You're getting ahead of yourself.
Bring up.
Let us deal with one thing at a time here.
So we're going to leave the delivery and who gets to walk to the post office the same. I mean, I know there's a lot of discussion on that. I've had several people ask me about why don't we have one person. The problem is when that one person's gone unexpectedly, then it's going to fall on somebody else. So take your 15 minutes, enjoy your walk to the post office. If you're worried about getting there before the last pickup, leave 10 or 15 minutes early. I mean, it's two blocks to the post office. I don't think it's going to throw off anybody's day if they have to leave a few minutes early to get to the last.
Yeah, we need no action to maintain the status quo for how mail gets to the post office. We've got to dig into the postage meters because of the new requirements from the post system. I'd like to dig into that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What I'll do is I will set up a meeting, Rick, with Matt that's been working with us and you and Renee, and then I'll ask Matt to bring his supervisor as well. I'll just word it in that way.
Yep. Perfect. I'd like to do that. I want to see, Shelley, I want to see everything you've got for the last couple of years, just so I can start to do some kind of analysis on it. And I'd like us to have a new way, as we enter budget talks, I'd like to have a new way of splitting up specifically the 1,019 or whatever that fee is going to be based on usage.
Well, and depending on our decisions going forward by January, that machine will have to be exchanged out.
Yeah, well, that's why I said 1,019 right. Or whatever it
whatever
is.
It, is. Yeah.
It should just be at the end of the month, we do X number of pieces of mail, and so you divide whatever we're paying for that machine by X, and that's the surcharge that goes back to each department and elected official based on usage of that piece of equipment.
What's interesting, when we got into it, this too, we found out there's one department that pays, which one is it?
Well, the attorney's office and conservation have the same machine, and sheriff's office and community services has the same machine, but they're all different monthly amounts.
It drives me bananas.
And the attorney's office pays a late fee every month.
Pays a late fee every month?
Why? Because the way our claim schedule is set up, they can't meet the deadline of the invoice. And so Teresa has just built that in.
Like $15?
Yeah, $10 to $15.
When does the new
somebody's head's gonna
postage meet?
Here.
That's right. I hope that shirt is waterproof.
Aren't you glad I found all this out?
Yeah, I really am. No,
it's good we found it out before. I mean, we had time to start researching this. And
so when does the new requirement kick in?
February 25th.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Good. That's plenty of time.
Yeah.
Well, we got to have the new barcode by then.
Or we pay full price.
In which case, there's no reason to pay the extra $1,000 a month. Let's just pull stamps and stick them on. Seriously.
Yeah.
And there's a little thing that now you can just lick. You just
swap. I need to hire a full-time person for that.
Oh, hey, there you go.
I've gotten really good at it.
Yeah.
One at a time, baby. Just stick them on.
So I will, December 30th, you're not having a full meeting, right?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, so organization. No,
that's January 2nd.
Yeah,
30th, we're having a meeting. We're trying to keep as much off that agenda as possible, but this can be on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will shoot to have a meeting or have more information from Pitney Bowes by then, too.
Good.
Mm. I'll work with you on your schedule.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Okay.
You sure that's it?
Well, it's like we uncovered one thing and found something else.
We're going to get this all figured out, and then it's going to go on the don't ever bring it up again list.
Copiers are next, and that's on your list.
Yeah. Okay, liaison assignments and committee meetings. Wayne.
I'll pass on the liaison assignments. I did meet with Deb yesterday morning, though, concerning the Regional Governance Board agenda and the items on that. Also, she shared with me the FY16 budget projections based on where the regions were and all the funding that have gone in from the member counties, and that was approved at our governance board meeting yesterday. And then the other aspect of that discussion, which we talked about during the meeting, was the approval of establishing defined roles for various members that were appointed by the CEO to carry out duties for the region. Individuals have been doing a lot of these things all year long, but we had no way of looking at a cost or the determining the amount of region work that is actually put in place, and so now we have a process in place to do that. We approved a financial officer that will be assigned by the CEO, and that's going to be Jill Eaton. We approved planning officer, which will be Russell Wood, the operations officer, Jody Eaton, and the compliance officer, John Grush. And then there was coordination officers that were divided up into quadrants within our region for more effective communication in that area to coordinate services and things like that. And so it, all in all, it was a very good discussion. The only other thing that I will add was just an update to the governance board on the movement within CLP. We have some encouraging news in that there was a letter of interest deadline posted. We've had received three inquiries from potential providers that are interested in looking at the CLP program. One has actually been here and toured the facility, and we're waiting to hear back from the other two. There's a deadline for, I think, the end of December to submit some budget projections so that the admin team can move forward. But the encouraging thing is that we have seen some interest, and Deb and members of the admin team is encouraged with the preliminary discussion that is taking place right now, and hopefully there will be something that can be brought to the board in the middle of February for approval if we have been able to select a potential provider for that service.
Yeah, and something we're going to have to come to, and I know we all got an email from Deb. I didn't respond to it. If you guys did, I didn't see a response from you. But it's just questioning what kind of cost there's going to be on that building if one of these providers takes the whole thing.
Right.
Is something we've got to discuss sooner rather than later. I'll tell you that generally my feeling is we ought to have a lot of flexibility in trying to make it very affordable for a provider to take in it, but we can't neglect the maintenance and upkeep of that building. And in my mind, that means as long as Story County owns it, our facilities people are going to be responsible for it. And one of the hard and fast costs that we're going to have with that building is paying for that.
Correct.
And so we just need to keep that in mind as we build whatever it is we can build to try to make it attractive to somebody to come in on a short-term basis and utilize that building.
I'm gonna try to meet with at least Deb and Lisa and Cal, and we'll try to put some figures together. I lean the same direction that you do as far as what the lease would be. I mean, we need to make sure we can get somebody make it as easy as possible for a provider to come in there.
Yeah, I mean, so, for me, ultimately, I'm going to have real hesitation in Story County becoming a landlord long-term.
Right.
But if there's a short-term solution
that
can assist somebody with getting in the building and then they acquire it from us, that can make some sense to me.
Yeah.
Right. So we're going to try to put together just some numbers if this provider, so they can put their budget together, proposed budget.
Good. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And then public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on the agenda. The board may not take any actions on the comments or the requirement for the open meeting along, but may do so in the future. Not seeing anybody move towards to make announcements from the supervisor. Wayne?
Tomorrow is the 150th celebration for the city of Ames. There is a platting day celebration that's taking place 11:45 tomorrow at 5th and Douglas. Will be a time capsule dedication, and then there's going to be a reception beginning around 5:00, an open house throughout the city, and some events down on Main Street as well. So people will be able to visit several of the facilities and buildings, such as not only the library, but Adams Funeral Home, the Ames History Center, the Octagon Center, and I'm told there's going to be trolley rides that's going to be provided in that area. So a lot of this is going to take place, again, around 5 p.m. with the open house. But at 11:45, I think it's just notification for any people that are listening to this if they want to just come out and be part of the celebration of Ames' 150th sesquicentennial celebration, I believe it's called.
Good. Close enough. Rick.
Nothing other than a motion to adjourn.
Second.
So moved.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye.